News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 8.06 on Mobile Mornings. Good to have you along. It's the 8 o'clock hour, meaning that you're allowed in too. 251-343-0106. We don't have our call screener, Leanna, with us this morning, but if you give a call, we'll try to make it all work out.
Yeah.
So again, 251-343-0106. That's also the text line.
It sure is. And we'll get to some of those texts here in just a minute, and plenty to talk about this hour, including something we kind of briefly touched on last hour, but all of this federal funding, and we'll actually get into a couple of stories of federal funding, including cuts coming to departments, state departments,
yep,
in Alabama, which we all expected, but apparently some state departments did not. We'll get into that. Plus, the EPA taking money for the, the Inflation Reduction Act, or I think it was the infrastructure bill that they gave money to the EPA for. And believe it or not, Dan, they're using that money not for climate initiatives, but they're using it for other Democrat causes. We'll get into some of those, too.
How do you do... How does that happen?
Well,
how where's the checks and balances that say, look, this money was allocated to the EPA for climate concerns?
Well, first you have to have a watchdog that notices some spending is has gone awry, but then you have to have a government or a Congress more specifically that says, hey, using this money on something you're not supposed to be using this money on. Unfortunately, anytime that happens on either side of the aisle, the other side of the aisle says, oh, no, it's no big deal. We'll just keep it rolling. Mm. But this seems...
Because they're doing it themselves.
Right. This seems particularly egregious on a couple of different fronts, but we'll get into that as well. But I was mentioning how, you know, you look at some of these different media sites, whether you're CNN, Fox News, New York Post, Wall Street Journal, and
The Atlantic, which I've read an interesting article in The Atlantic over the weekend.
Interesting. And they all have their take, and it moves, you know, it's day to day sometimes, hour to hour. Who is the leading candidate to be Trump's vice presidential nominee? And very often, if you pay close attention, or even if you're not paying that close attention, you go, well, I think this person may have floated this article about themselves, like trying to promote themselves in the world of Trump. And that's exactly what I got from this article from the New York Post this weekend. It looks like they posted this on Saturday. Now, tell me if you think maybe North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum maybe had his hands on this story before it was delivered to the New York Post. They said, North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum has emerged as a leading contender to serve as former President Trump's VEEP, which insiders attribute to his perceived lack of interest in higher office and a disciplined ability to fade into the background.
Wait a minute. Wait one more time. What was the statement?
This is the opening, okay?
The statement about Burgum.
North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum has emerged as a leading contender to serve as Trump's VEEP, which insiders attribute to his perceived lack of interest in higher office and a disciplined ability to fade into the background.
Oh, so that's to his advantage.
Right.
Is that right? He's such a nothing that Trump won't feel threatened by him.
That's the take they're taking here.
Yeah.
That seems to be the tact that Burgum is taking to put himself in that position. Hey, by the way, no one will even know that I'm your VP if you choose me as your VP. And I don't even care about being president, honestly. That's kind of what's coming from the Burgum camp. They said many grassroots activists are keen for Trump to name a youthful, hard-charging number two who will be a successor to his movement, but the former president has little appetite for such a person, according to insiders. I have a feeling these insiders may be connected to Burgum.
They may be from the Dakotas.
They may be from the Dakotas. Trump, who would... And, you know, people have said that about Trump before.
Yeah.
And it's maybe a good argument for why he chose Mike Pence as his VP the first go-around.
It's always geographic and the evangelical vote.
That's course. What I think played a major role in Pence was the evangelical vote. And I thought at the time Trump was maybe getting someone who'd been around, knew how things work, and could maybe help him help guide him through some of the executive branch politics there. But you got it. I mean, Pence was the most boring, one of the most boring he could have picked. So maybe that's why. But back to this article, they said Trump, who would be a lame duck on day one of a new term, is nervous about a vice president launching their own 2028 campaign the minute they come to Washington. One person familiar with the discussions says Elise Stefanik.
Bergen himself.
Elise Stefanik is a young rising star. Marco Rubio, same thing. Long record with a record of seeking the presidency. J.D. Vance would immediately be a successor in 2028, considering his rising star status. But Trump has also bluntly stated his preference for a man with central casting Veep appearance and good hair, per another insider. So far what we've learned about...
What does Burgum's hairstyle look like?
Well, it's good. It's good hair.
Like it's an upgrade. It's much better than mine.
And they write in the article, Burgum, however, has great hair. And I guess the central casting Veep appearance that Burgum's people, I mean, whoever these insiders are saying that they need. Burgum is somebody who's very smart, who has a lot of money. I do think that might be a part of the reason here. Not interested in public service to enrich himself. He understands Trump on a business level, and he's a quiet, steady hand, but still a sharp surrogate when needed for Trump. So basically, this entire glowing piece about Burgum, which is another 500 to 750 words that I didn't get to, if you pay close enough attention, you could just about, and I think accurately say, I think Burgum's people planted that story.
You know, it sounds like if you were to look at the Braves farm system, say, okay, who's coming up that might really be good? And you say, well, that guy's really fast. This guy's got a fastball of 100 miles an hour and this and that. But that little second baseman that hits 250 mm-hmm. for the Gwinnett Braves, there's something about him. He brings something to the table the the others don't bring. I think he's the guy the Braves are going to bring up in September and watch him go. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, to talk about everything, the qualities working against, and I get it, there could be some truth to it, but talking about Stefanik and Rubio and J.D. Vance, and they're too charismatic, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're too good, and as soon as they get in, they're going to be talking about 2028. So to put all your faith in your inability to get attention, to put all your faith, like, that's why I'm the guy, or if you, whoever wrote it in favor of Burgum. It's, and so you have Scott, South Carolina, Ben Carson, Byron Daniels, Florida, mm-hmm. least qualified in terms of the time he's spent in Congress, Burgum, Stefanik, Rubio, and J.D. Vance.
Right.
And Burgum's been the one... Because at least the others are involved in Scott Daniels. You know, Scott Easley, we know him. Byron Daniels, he's involved in the conversation about what's going on in Washington as a congressman. He's on the news a lot on Fox and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So you know who they are because they're able to. You know, you seem Stefanik at some of the White House hearings, or rather the congressional hearings and such.
Mm-hmm.
They're able to play their game and get attention.
Right.
Burgum's out there. He's fly fishing.
He's kind of on an island.
Yeah, he's kind of on an island. And so to think that they want to bring attention to him, but they do it in the most backhanded way.
Yeah, and by saying, listen, he looks great. He has movie star looks, but he also has the ability like a off-screen character in the movies to just kind of slink away.
Yeah.
That's the selling points on Burgum. And at the same time, you have articles coming out saying, well, one time rising star on the Trump Veep list, Tim Scott, now extremely unlikely to be chosen.
Hmm.
And that's another article that came out from the same publication just the day before that Burgum one. I think this whole thing, I think no one really knows. You might have Trump come out and float a possible name. I think that's kind of what was happening with Katie Britt before the mm-hmm. Response to the State of the Union kind of sunk her immediate chances to be in the Trump office as VP. But maybe every now and then they float a name, but I really don't think you're getting this kind of inside information because I think it's just Trump who's going to be the ultimate decider. Remember, he spoke with Fox News last week after he, let's see if I can turn this off here, after he met with some of the members of Congress, including Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. But here was Trump when Fox asked him when he would have a VP selection ready?
A lot of folks surrounding you. Some of them are on the short list for VP.
Yeah.
Was your pick for VP in that room with you?
Probably, yeah. Probably. I don't want to go, but probably. I think we'll probably announce it during the convention.
Do you know who your VP is?
I have sort of a pretty good idea. Look, we have some really talented people. I have a pretty good idea.
So he said probably
Trump,
in the
Trump's like saying the least talented of the better chance. He should have just snuck that in there.
Yeah. I'm looking for someone who
is not very talented.
Is not someone, yeah. So that was Trump. I guess we'll know before or during the convention next month whether or not Trump is behind bars or not is another question, but we'll learn of the VP choice at some point.
Also, you got to look at those stories carefully as for, you know, what publication, what there are so many, not just Democrats or operatives, but a lot of journalists that are just like the editor or publisher of the Atlantic himself. I mean, mm-hmm. he can't sleep at night because of Donald Trump. Seriously,
His
editorials are just, this is the worst man to ever come across the landscape.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have people like that, it could also be, in a way, people are dropping this stuff that are trying to do harm to Trump, you know? So,
yeah, and that's the go-to.
There's a lot of journalists that really, really just despise Trump and would want to do harm to his campaign in any way that they could. Anything's on the table as mm-hmm. far as some of these folks are concerned, because they're just, you know, they hate Trump.
Yeah, I mean, they'd be happy as a clam to see him put in jail for the rest of his life. I mean, even on bunk charges. But that's kind of the go-to, right? Oh, if Trump is elected, it's the end of America.
Yeah, really?
As we know it.
Really?
And that argument just falls flat to me, considering that the current president has no open lines of communication with the Russian president right mm-hmm. now. No incentive or effort to try to end the war in Ukraine, which could very easily pop off into World War III
yep.
if we're not already there. But they're telling you that this other candidate is going to be the end of the world. It's just, I think so many of those arguments fall flat. Look at the text line before we go to the break.
Sure.
Grant says Tulsi or Carrie Lake would be a slam dunk for VP. Martin says, what about the Indian guy for VP? He's extremely smart. You're talking about Vivek there, I believe.
Too smart.
He says maybe too smart and outspoken for Trump.
Okay, yeah, that's the whole point. I agree.
Second half of Martin's text there. This texter says it's well known, and the Trump organization. It's well known in the Trump organization that Donald Trump does not want a big name VP. He wants, when he leaves in 4 years, for the RNC to battle it out. He doesn't want to have a predecessor like the Democratic Party. Dalton, do your homework. All right, I do. I do my homework.
Dalton does
do a lot
much
of
much homework as anybody.
And yeah, I just don't know if that is. You say it's well known in the Trump organization, and it is the easy go to move. Well, Trump doesn't want anyone hogging the spotlight, but I don't think that's his number one qualifier for who his VP is.
Mm-hmm.
I think big money, which Burgum checks.
Yeah,
but so do others. You know, Vivek checks that box. So does J.D. Vance. He's got some money from his past life as an author. And I think he did some tech work too, but I think that's a big box they need to check. I think specifically for this election, Trump needs to pick a VP who, to the establishment, is just as poisonous as he is. And if they think he's poisonous,
mm-hmm.
and I think he needs a VP who wouldn't necessarily, in the eyes of the deep state or the establishment, be a step up over Trump, like someone that they could guide.
Why
like
do you think
Nikki
that?
Haley.
Why do you think, in terms of electability, why would that help?
Well, I don't. I think it's less important as far as electability who he has as his VP selection.
Mm-hmm.
I think people will go either to vote for or against Trump.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as far as knocking him out of office, if he is to win the election, any kind of bulwark you could put in there to kind of disincentivize them knocking him out of office one way or the other. If the VP is Tommy Tuberville or Vivek, I think they'd have less incentive to try to take Trump out of office.
I got it.
Maybe not a whole lot less of an incentive, but still a little bit less of an incentive.
Okay. And then what exactly is going on in Ukraine? What I was reading over the weekend, and can we believe it or not? Well, can we talk about that on the way?
Please, yeah.
It is 8:21 with Dan and Dalton and Mobile Mornings. Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. And a couple of notes from an article that I read from in the Atlantic, which, you know, I would have to say pretty left-leaning. But anyway, they're a lady that and writer that keeps an eye on the war in Ukraine says basically what she said, Ann Applebaum, that there's three wars going on right now. So one is the land war where Russia's not really moving forward right there at Kharkiv, I guess.
The ever-living stalemate over there.
That's one of the wars going on in Ukraine right now. But she says when you look it over, it really is like three different wars. There's one in the Black Sea right now. She says Ukraine has been attacking and shooting missiles at Crimea. That's the part of Ukraine that is right near the sea, right? Mm-hmm. That was annexed by Russia 2014. So at Crimea, you've got Russia was using that as kind of a, I don't know, kind of like a warehouse. All of their, they've got the prisoners there, but they also have all of their equipment. And so they're bombing the heck out of Crimea to make it almost like it's not going to survive.
Right.
And they're doing that because that's where the, you know,
it's the Black Sea port.
Yeah, and the munitions are there and all that. So, there's that. So you got the land war, and then you got the long range war, she said. So that's almost, consider if it was a sporting event, you'd probably have three different
fronts.
And three different maybe people calling the shots. The long range war, Ukraine is damaging Russian oil refineries in Russia, right, with the missiles and all. And Russia is attacking Ukraine long range as well. She said that the electronic warfare going on in this war is like nothing we've ever seen before. That it's like cutting edge, mm-hmm. And you might not think that when you look at some of the, you know, the footage. But she said it is so cutting edge. Drones that can give you a whole view of the battlefield. Where can you imagine? You know, why is an offensive coordinator in the press box? You can see the whole field. Mm-hmm. Well, these drones are providing that for Ukraine as well and Russia.
Yeah, it's like the and it's American intelligence. So
yeah.
It's like the Ukraine has an American offensive coordinator.
Yeah, exactly.
There.
Exactly.
I think that's, you know, I don't know if it's cynical or not, but one way that many Americans are looking at this war is, yeah, maybe, you know, the population of Ukraine is being devastated. Maybe the land is being devastated. But in the meantime, we're getting all of this intelligence for how modern age wars are fought.
Yeah.
And we're seeing the latest in technology that Russia brings to the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, the Russians are losing hundreds of thousands of warriors as well.
They
and
are.
The longer you draw that out, and they're losing losing equipment and artillery, you know, just like we are, the stuff we're funding Ukraine with. But
she says in this war, in this article, she says Ukraine has no choice. They're going to fight. Mm-hmm. Russia's the only one in this conflict that actually has a choice. And by next year, Russia's economy could be failing to the point where maybe Putin could take a victory here or there and then retreat. He's got the choice. And Ukraine has no choice. According to the article, they will fight to the end. They don't want all of their villages to become Russified and destroyed and all that. They're fighting for their existence, whereas Russia, that's not really the case.
Mm-hmm.
So the war ends when Russia leaves.
Well,
when does Russia leave?
Well, and that's the either-or situation that a lot of people have put out there, but no one is talking about a peace deal.
Right.
And I know that, you know, right now that peace deal would include Russia keeping the parts of Ukraine that they've annexed.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just a third option that really, I mean, you look at the national media, there was a lot of talk last week and the week before about the U.S. proposed ceasefire deal for Iran and Hamas, I mean, for Israel and Hamas.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Russian peace deal that was put out last week, and it involved, you know, NATO clearing from the Russian borders, but an end to the war. And maybe it wasn't a good deal, but no one is talking about that one at all.
Interesting. 830 FM Talk 106.5, Dan and Dalton in Mobile Mornings.
FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings on a Monday. Right now it's time to head to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louis Arata. Hey, Louis.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Man, we are great. And talking a little bit about some boating. I know a lot of folks got out on the water this last weekend, and plenty more where that came from the rest of this spring and summer. And you have some trucks at McConnell Automotive that can tow those boats, no problem.
That's right, and you're right. There is a lot of boats out there. I was out this weekend, and I cannot believe all the people with boats. And yeah, we got some great deals on those half tons, and that'll pull nice size boat, and three quarter tons, and we got one tons. We got dualies here. I mean, we got everything to pull a boat with. We got some used and new. Also got some great deals on those GM certifieds. Got some Acadias, Enclaves, just some nice looking GM certifieds out there. And we're going to be here all day. Looks like the rain hopefully will hold off for a little bit. So y'all come on by and see us.
Yeah. And also, if people are sick of playing the game that, well, you play every day, trying to sell their vehicle, they can cut out the middleman and just sell it directly to you.
That's right. You can call 251-476-4141. You can talk to Mike Hatcher, Eddie Hicks, or Gene Stuckey. They'll all answer your phone, try to figure out if we can buy your car or not, give you a great deal on it.
All right. It's that easy. Thank you, Louie.
Hey, thank y'all.
That's Louie Arata. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and the website, McConnellAutomotive.com.
I like the I don't know how or why this text came in so clear that I can see it so easily, as opposed to the other.
That's because that's someone posted a meme and sent it over to you. Yeah.
Okay. Well, okay. Well, anyway, yeah, that does make sense. It's a meme, and it says, if you can be a felon and be president, they need to remove felon off of all job applications, rental applications, and professional certifications. If the highest position in the land can be taken by a felon, all positions should follow suit. I don't know if that's an anti-Trump meme or not, but in any event.
Yeah, I think it probably was.
I think, yeah. So anyway, on the text line, 251-343-0106.
Yeah, and what were those charges again? Business records?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That straightforward trial there, everything above board, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Grant says, I like Trump's messages. I'm tired of people dying. Stop the killing. He said, what if Trump goes and talks out a peace deal with both wars in Israel and Ukraine before the election? Best political move ever. Straight victory to the White House again. And, you know, Trump, he says the war would end within 24 hours. You see him anytime he's asked, he said he can end both wars. And, you know, maybe he can, but I don't think it's too tall of an ask that we just ask the Biden administration to have an open line with Putin or Lavrov, you know, someone in Putin's office. And that's not happening right now. I mean, it would be unthinkable to believe in the past and, you know, even in World War II. And I know some of you historians, you might rebut this directly, but I think we at least had ways to talk with the with Hitler and with his team in some form or fashion. It doesn't seem like there's really any communication going on right now between the U.S. and Putin's office.
You don't hear of any. I mean, you would think there's something going on, but you never hear of that being even alluded to.
Texter here says, have y'all seen the AL.com article about juvenile bull sharks? Looks like a speckled trout to me. Hey, it wouldn't be the first time that local media puts the picture of the wrong fish up there for a story they're discussing. Texter here, Trump only needs to pick someone who will help him get voters he does not already have locked down. Independents and voters who don't really like any choices. He's only going to be president for 4 years, so he needs someone he can sell for the future.
Well, I thought it was interesting over the weekend what he had. Was that Saturday or Sunday? I seen the story, but I didn't see any video of him sitting down in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it was just it was pretty much a coalition of black voters.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in their company to talk about what he would do for the black voters, for the black community, and what Biden's not doing. And he had the rally in the Bronx. That was a lot of people of color that were at that rally, including Hispanics and blacks. Not all, but...
Well, yeah, and as far as pulling in, you know, voters that he wouldn't traditionally be expected to pull, I think that is a genius move, what he's doing here, going into some of the inner city locations, like you mentioned there. And he was at this church in downtown Detroit, 180 Church, and his main message seems to be immigration.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of these places where immigration hasn't always been the top of their list as far as reasons to elect or not elect somebody. But it began when you started seeing DeSantis and Abbott which was, I don't think anyone knew how shrewd of a political move it would end up being, but sending these illegal immigrants into these blue states and sanctuary cities. And you see, you know, residents in Philadelphia or
Chicago
who are saying, hey, they're driving us out of our churches and our schools. And these are illegal immigrants who shouldn't be here. That seems to be a winning message to this point for Trump when he does go into some of these cities.
Yeah, I think so. That would be kind of the obvious message. But I think there is some, there is a popularity that Trump is gaining in communities of black and also Hispanic, where they see him as a victim, you know, the way he's been chased down and prosecuted. You know, you can have your opinion one way or the other on, you know, do you think these prosecutions, you know, were above board in any way, or just totally political, or somewhere in the middle. But he's gaining some traction with people who are paying enough attention that they're saying, I don't think this is right. And then you lop on the immigration, the illegal immigrants into many of these neighborhoods on top of all that. Now they're a little desperate. And then it's his message can also be simply, what has Biden done? Why are you better off now than before Biden took office? Which, by the way, Trump was president then. If he places, if he, and another thing that I don't see Trump doing, which Biden is terrible at, is he's not really hat in hand to the black community. Like Biden tries to talk jive and talk about all his time in black churches growing up and all, a bunch of, you know, bull.
A bunch of malarkey.
People got to be, and a lot of people are seeing right through that. Trump's just Trump. He walks in and he says, here's the problem, here's the solution.
Yeah.
Here's where I see you guys are getting screwed, and here's what I would do about it. I mean, that's about as upfront as you can be. Now, you know, love for anyone out there who's listening and happens to be African-American, call the show or text the show. Let us know what you think, or do you see any kind of momentum that Trump is building in any portion of your community?
Yeah, and I think, you know, these trips he's taking, these rallies, if you want to call them that, or sit-down meetings, I think he doesn't necessarily need to drive these voters out to the polls for him, but at the very least, keep them from going and, you know, pulling the lever for Biden, which it's a base that I think the Democrats think they have locked up, and why wouldn't they, you know, after the last several decades? But if he can just keep a lot of these voters from going out and voting for Biden, you could probably consider a lot of these things wins.
That's a win too, I guess, for Trump.
Yeah. 8:43. I do want to get into this story with Eric Mackey and the state school board and federal funding now drying up, just like everyone predicted. But I think there's going to be a lot more repercussions, really nationally, including all this state level stuff as the COVID funding kind of dries up. And of course, we've already seen not just from the national government, but the state government talking about raising taxes, and I think a lot of that is to offset these losses in federal funds as we get further and further away from the pandemic. You know, this online state simplified seller's use tax that they're talking about raising, they're saying it's to even the field, right, between local businesses, local brick-and-mortar storefronts, and online, where you're paying, you know, 1% or 1.5% less in sales tax now. But I think a big, big part of that argument that the state may be not revealing is they're losing funding from the federal government and are looking for ways to kind of, if they can, top off the coffers. But, you know, how much of that federal money was gone, either because of fraud or government waste? I think a ton of it. And we've already seen some of the numbers as far as like explicit fraud, people applying for business loans or personal loans and then using them for themselves. They didn't actually have a business that was affected.
We had those people caught down here.
Yeah, but a lot of government waste too. And you have this story, Wall Street Journal. The Biden administration quietly funneled $50 million in taxpayer funds earmarked for clean energy to two groups that oppose immigration enforcement. So this was the EPA, and they had $3 billion set aside in the Inflation Reduction Act. Remember, this was to reduce inflation, is what they build it as.
I love the way that they name these things, and they're not even close to what they're claiming. It's like, this is a newspaper. No, that's a rock. This is an eagle. No, that's a turtle.
It was basically, you know, the green new energy deal in many ways under the banner of inflation reduction.
Right.
So you had the EPA. They took $50 million of this $3 billion and gave that to the New York Immigration Coalition and the New Jersey Alliance for Immigrant Justice. Now, this was supposed to go towards environmental and climate block grants, which I'm not necessarily endorsing putting the money towards that, but that's what they had earmarked this for. This was supposed to go towards that. They said, believe it or not, neither of those groups' missions have anything to do with protecting the environment. Instead, they adamantly support abolishing ICE. They believe guarding borders is, quote, racist and classist, and want to block state and local government employees from cooperating with federal immigration officials. Now, you have Senator Shelley Moore Capito from West Virginia, and they are probing IRA spending, and she's the one who found this money going towards these groups. She said her findings prove Biden's recent tough talk about cracking down on border security is just talk, calling it hypocrisy at the highest level, very slack oversight at the least. And it wasn't just these anti-immigration groups, but they also found last month, Capito said the EPA awarded $50 million from the same grant program to Climate Justice Alliance, a group that backs anti-Israel protests. So you've got money going towards anti-immigration enforcement and groups that endorse anti-Israel protests.
Well, you got to give them credit. They're covering their bases.
They're covering all of them.
They're covering all the bases of what is top of mind for all Americans right now.
Right.
They're getting it all.
No reply from the EPA since this was discovered. They said the agency previously said the immigration groups and Fordham University, which was tapped as a grant maker, will take, and this is how they get away with it, they'll take a, quote, an intersectional approach to place frontline communities in positions of power to advance climate justice in disadvantaged and hard-to-reach communities and communities disproportionately impacted by climate change, pollution, and other environmental stressors. So they're saying in the long term, this
what is. What are they saying?
In the long term, this is about fighting climate change because it is helping disadvantaged communities who have been affected by climate change. It's kind of like a circular argument that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense on its face. But if you use the fancy, you know, social justice cues like intersectional approach,
I've got a
positions of power.
Have they been more affected by climate change because, I don't know, they're from closer to the equator? Is that the way they're working it in?
That's part of it too. Yeah, they say a lot of these migrants come from places that have just been wrecked by climate change.
Okay.
And it's our duty as Americans to bring them in. So, yeah, that all goes into the argument. But what it is just obvious to everyone. You get these huge federal handouts and money earmarked for things that, well, they're not really interested in solving. They're more interested in letting people come through the border or put on another protest at Harvard to show your disdain for the war in Gaza. I mean, just I'd say it's unbelievable, but it's not.
No,
totally expected.
No, it feels unbelievable, but it is believable. It's and by the way, here's how about the disadvantaged people of Mobile taking it 2.5 hours to get over to Daphne. Is there any money up there at all for that? I'm just wondering.
They're looking.
And you know, just burning gas and oil in a standstill on the Bayway for hours at a time, that can't be helping the climate.
I wouldn't think so.
Send that money our way, y'all. 849, Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings. For vice president on the text line. I like that. I like having a friend who's in power that I can get a lot of free stuff. That's basically why I want you to be vice president.
I have a head of hair and I can slink into the shadows.
What you got on the
that's
Jeff Ford show?
Right?
Yeah, that's the
It's the qualifiers.
And no drive for higher office. That's a big, big one, too.
Yeah.
Greg Davis with ALCAP joins Jeff in hour number one. Hour number two, State Representative Shane Stringer on the Jeff Poor Show. And right around 11:30, you can catch Dale Jackson from WVNN. All of that on the way in the Jeff Poor Show here in just a few minutes. Anderson from Foley says, their devil speak is nothing more than doing a little sidestep, like in the best little blank house in Texas. Moz, what good is a $1 billion ETF surplus if it can't be used to offset federal cuts to education? We can't use COVID funds for prisons, but the EPA can give money to help illegal immigration and anti-Israel groups. And, you know, just like last week when we talked about the annual pork book, or pig book, as they call it, which shows all the earmarks and how much spending went towards pet projects during the last congressional fiscal year. We look at problems we have, and I think probably just about every community across the country can say the same thing. And you say, wait, why are we spending this much money on that when, I don't know, we have an interstate down here that people get stuck on for 3 hours at a time.
Yeah.
3.5 hours, you know, an interstate. And an interstate that basically gets everyone from south and southwest U.S. to Florida. This isn't just some small game, right?
No.
And you see all this spending. And same thing with, I mean, time and time again, we talked about it. All of this federal funding will dry up at some point. And you had both in the Trump administration and the Biden administration, trillions and trillions of dollars in taxpayer funds, taxpayer money, that were handed out. And no real oversight. So much of it was just stolen right from under the government's nose. But also so much of it not technically stolen, but just used in, you know, inefficient ways. And you would think that if we all knew this money would dry up, that our state government and local governments knew the same.
Yeah.
But I just don't know if there are that kind of those off ramps in government to start planning for things like that. They're just all go all the time, get all the money you can and spend it. Doesn't matter how wisely you spend it, just spend it. And now you've got schools in Alabama who, I guess at least they're looking at it now. Eric Mackey, the state school superintendent, said there are big cuts coming to schools across the state.
And you're thinking, why?
Mm-hmm.
How? Supermajority of GOP up there.
Right.
Do they act like it?
And, you know, they talked about that surplus that Moz was mentioning there and how much money we have in the Education Trust Fund. But basically, Mackey last week said, all right, you have the federal funds drying up. Chilton County has already cut their after-school program, which, you know, in this article, Alabama Daily News, the free after-school program. Anytime we mention that, of course, mm-hmm. people on the text line correctly point out, well, no, it's not free.
Yeah, it's free to the kids.
It's being subsidized.
Yes.
But Chilton County already cut out that program, said several districts are already cutting positions, including teachers. Since that money started flowing in, he said, we have about 3,000 more employees in public schools than in 2019 and 2020. At the same time, 20,000 fewer kids in the school system. 3,000 more students, 20,000 fewer kids.
3,000 more employees?
That's correct, than we had in 2019. So I don't know why so many kids are leaving. If it's a generational thing, more students are graduating out than you have already in the system, or if a lot of people are going homeschooling or private schools or just moving away, which I don't think...
That number doesn't sound right. 3,000 more school employees around the state since 2019.
Yeah, and 20,000 fewer students. He said that's not sustainable. That's going to normalize. And that number of employees, as the federal money goes away, is going to come down. Now, they've been telling us for years that we're in a hiring crisis for teachers across the state.
Yes.
I don't think that has abated, even if they have 3,000 more school employees now than they did.
Are they electricians? Are they maintenance? I mean, 3,000 is a phenomenal number for this state.
Yeah, and Mackey said he urged school districts to not drag their feet making those decisions. Doing so could result in severe budgetary consequences. A lot of school districts and more departments around the state are going to be having some severe money crunches coming up.
8:59, Dan and Dalton, do it all for you again tomorrow beginning at 6 a.m. on FM Talk 106.5.